But anyways, Mike Sullivan, thanks for joining me. Thanks for being back on.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, you're a bit of a mystery man in my podcast because I hit the wrong button on the GoPro last time, so we just ended up getting fully audio. So
that's all right. Now people know who I look like.
Now people get to see your beautiful face.
Yes.
See?
Yeah. Yeah. There's Mike. Yeah, man. And so gathering today because it's your last week in Montana and that's your right. last week is fire prevention detail.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so, man, it was good to have you. I mean, yeah. your record was pretty stellar, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep, no fire. Well, we had a few fires when the thing man-caused since I was here, so.
Not one man-caused fire since you were here?
Not one man-caused, nope.
That's pretty good, man. I don't know what you're doing out there, shaking hands or something?
I guess so.
Man.
Shaking hands, doing something right.
Yeah, showing that pretty face all over town, like,
yeah.
Please don't burn our forest.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty lucky, man. We get a pretty rowdy forest. So, I mean, most public lands can get a little rowdy and stuff happens. So, you know, like, even just like folks dragging a chain down the highway, you know, like, no one's doing that on purpose, I don't think, you know.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So it just happens, man. I mean, that's like my fear, even pulling the Airstream is, I got it secured down. I like double and triple check, but God, wouldn't that be a terrible thing? Like, you just see like a, you know, ditch full of fire with my Airstream pole, you know, at the head of it. Like, oh, look out, podcast. Yeah, starts a giant wildfire.
Yeah, we were coming back from St. Louis one time. The wife and I were driving down the highway, and somebody was dragging their chain, you know, and it's just causing sparks. And the funny thing is like the police drove like right past them.
Really?
And we were, like in California, you get pulled over. And, like,
oh, it would be a bad deal.
It would be a bad deal. Yeah. This wildfire is crazy there.
Yeah,
Missouri, it's like, yeah. Who cares? Whatever.
Yeah. It'll sort itself out. Not
That's
a big deal.
Right.
Well, apparently, some checking from you to the cameras and from the camera to the Zoom here.
Yeah.
But, man. So how was the trip in a hole? I mean, like we talked about,
it was really good. I really enjoyed myself here.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great having you.
A lot of made a lot of friends and miss all you guys.
Yeah, we're miss having you too. It was great having you, and hopefully get you to come back. And
yeah, my wife Liz and I plan on coming back. You know, doing a little vacation travel. So we'll be back in hopefully August next. I guess not, but August next year is when they have the
Celtic Festival.
The Celtic Festival.
Yeah, I was kind of blanking on it.
Yeah,
my brain was drifting because we had talked right before this about your trip back and maybe making some stops. But you were talking about maybe just powering through back to Missouri.
Yeah, I was
going to
power through and then.
Yeah, and then on the way back with the wife, stop and see some of the attractions.
Because that's our plan. I would, you know, I get mostly summers off to do whatever I want. So it's a good time to see the great United States, all the parks that we've never seen, and
yeah, man, and there's a string of them between here and there. You
yeah,
know,
there's
like,
a lot. Yes.
Yeah, Devil's Tower, Badlands, Rushmore.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. There's probably a pile more that I don't know about. You know, some kind of Great Prairie or something, probably in South
Custer,
Dakota.
Custer.
Oh yeah, Custer.
Little Bighorn.
Yeah.
What else is there?
Man, well, then Yellowstone's kind of on the way. Yeah, so you got that big old park.
There's also Glacier.
Oh, yeah.
Which is right, like, 3 hours away from here, so yeah.
Yeah, just north. So, yeah, you can kind of do a pretty big pretty big trip and all in one, yeah.
Couple weeks of road tripping it up and, good.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That'll be great. Yeah, it's good. It's good, man. I think, you know, plowing through, you know, is a time and place, you know, because, you know, my in-laws and some of my family there in the Midwest, we, you know, cruise back and see them, and usually it's like limited time, so we just, you know, hammer down in long days, and so it's tough if, you know, if all of us are beat, the dogs, you know, and the family just like whooped, like, you gotta like recover when you get there.
But
in the future, you know, like my grandpa, I'm not sure exactly how my great-grandpa traveled with this thing, because by the time I can remember, it was passed down to my grandparents. So, like, one from my great-grandparents to my grandparents. And my grandparents traveled well, man. And I'm trying to take a card from their book. My dad would get antsy, and he'd be like, let's just go. You, like, want to be somewhere? But my grandpa would be like, you know, I saw something, heard something at a rest stop maybe. And he's like, this is the KOA we're hitting. You know, we'll be there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're just going to kick back.
A little diversion,
Yeah, and there's a, you know, like, pool and playground for the kids. So we go swim and everything else and ride our bikes like crazy around the campground, and which is great being a little kid because you plow through like a 12-hour day on the road. And as a kid, you were just, man, it probably taught me some resilience, you know, because like back then, I mean, like my first few trips, I don't think a Game Boy even existed, you know? So definitely. There was like nothing. And I think that was even like pre-Goosebumps books. Mm-hmm. So like Goosebumps books like really helped me out because I'm not much of a reader, but like, those would captivate me even as a young kid, you know? But yeah, when there was not much to do, just like me staring at the dog, you know? And there was no air conditioning in our Suburban, I think, for the first couple trips, you know, back and forth from the Midwest to Montana. So, whew.
Yeah, we used to go camping every week, every year with my grandparents. Like, my brother and I would go to my grandparents' house for 2 weeks during the summertime, and we'd go, you know, camping someplace. Or, like, even with my parents, we'd go road tripping, you know. It was like, there was no, you know, my mom would borrow books from the library, like audio books or just a book, and read it to us as we're, you know, traveling around with our, you know, the old station wagon back in the, you know, 70s and 80s. Early 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm 49, so I grew up in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. So. That was like station wagon era.
Yes, it is.
They really went away. Like the 90s, they were kind of still hanging around a little bit, but then like things kind of went. I don't know if I can trust this. There's some movement there that I don't think was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So might be holding this thing after a little bit. These mics are just a little bit too heavy, I think, for these.
Yeah, they could be.
Boom arms. So
from closer to.
Yeah.
Make the angle like less.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have to bring them in a little bit.
Yeah.
Then this wood is, you know, from 1965. So
right.
It's screaming a little bit when I'm moving stuff around. I'm gonna make something nice. I'm gonna do like a custom cedar here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause cedar like repels woods and rot and it's you know, really strong for how thin it is, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can get away with the thinner.
Yeah, but you need to keep the linoleum top though.
You can't
old school.
Can't make it too fancy.
Yeah, you have old school. You need to keep it old school. Looking at least.
Well, no, that's what I was thinking of the cedar. I'll keep it like, kind of like a, you know, like raw wood looking. So give it more of the cabin feel. So I was kind of thinking, oh, man, it reminds me. I got my prayer flags. I forgot to put them up.
Yeah.
I got these little travel prayer flags, and there's kind of a story that goes behind, goes with those too.
Oh, nice. But,
yeah, I guess I told like part of it when we were going to sail the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. My friend Casey was awesome. Awesome guy, just adventurer, just wild man and spear fisherman, and dude can hold his breath for like ever, like free dive and, you know, spearfish and just a beast, like one of the first people I saw as a smoke jumper, and he just looks like a Greek god, and I was like, wow, I'm in a different class of human here, you know, like that's what I should be looking like, and I don't. But yeah, great dude, and we were about to do our sailing trip, and we all had our little berths in my buddy Bronson's sailboat, and so like above his little berth, he put like these little like portable prayer flags. I'm like, mm-hmm. Dang, that's a great idea, you know. So I snagged some after the trip and used to bring them to like Winthrop at the jump base there. I think I had them hung up, or maybe not. Maybe it was West. It might have been West. So I went out to West. I hung them there. You know, as a wildland person, you can be anywhere and you know, all the time, like in different, like. You apply for jobs all over, you just end up somewhere and you go to, and hopefully they have housing, you end up in their bunkhouse. And so, you know, you get to make it yours a little bit. So like having those prayer flags and a few other little things I'd bring with me, you know, to simple decorations that are easy to pack.
Yeah. Make it homey for yourself.
Make it a little homey, give it a little like chill, you know, like, I don't know, like Zen-ish feel, you know, like where you're more relaxing, you know, like, but yeah, derailed the scammer, like we're going before I threw that out there.
You're taking your trip to the Bahamas.
Oh, the Bahamas, yeah. And I was going to tie that into another story because me and Bronson were supposed to do a podcast on that because that podcast will be out before this one. So the Reen podcast, the recent one I did with Reen, where he was the guest host. So I was his guest and he was the host, you know, in here in my podcast. And
right.
So he interviewed me, and as I was like going through the stories, it was like, a lot of intertwined with Bronson, and mm-hmm. you know, we grew up together. He's my brother's best friend and one of my brother's best friends, and ends up being like, you know, another older brother to me pretty much throughout all this. And especially in fire, you know, we had so much overlapping with fire and helping each other out and stuff. So like, gonna have him on the podcast and tell the pool story of that sailing mission that didn't make it. We were in the Atlantic, but we didn't make it to the Bahamas.
Mm.
Pretty wild ride, but for a little bit of it, we're probably too dumb to be scared. It's probably what everything came down to. We were traveling, talking about like making travel plans. So like, my grandpa would make these stops, you know, mm-hmm. and, and take his time when he's going somewhere. And it made it nice. It made it more part of the trip instead of just like trying to get there. And,
right.
And, you know, that old saying about, you know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think that can apply to so many things, you know, especially road tripping. Like, man, we're pretty fortunate to be in the U.S. and have these beautiful, every state has something, you know, some beautiful spots along the way. Like, I didn't realize New Jersey was so nice until I went out and worked there. And I was like, dang, this is pretty cool, you know, got out in the Atlantic and did some tuna fishing, you know, one day. Yeah, like, courtesy of the guy we were working for, George mm-hmm. Harms, I think it was, for the bridge construction out that way. And as like a bonus for the work we were doing, he had his own like deep sea fishing boat and he rigged us up for tuna and we went out and spent a day on his boat. It was amazing. Yeah, it was unreal. Like I was kind of young, so I didn't realize what I was getting into really, but looking back, it's like, dang, super cool, man. Like we went and crashed on it the night before because we were heading out so early in the morning to mm-hmm. try to get out far enough in the ocean to catch the schools of tuna that were cruising through that area. And I don't really know, that's about as far as I know about it. My knowledge ends there.
Right.
I just know I'd be there early, you know, or we had to leave early, so we showed up late at night and crashed. And man, it was unreal. You know, you wake up and we were already underway. I mean, I kind of heard us like the big diesel motors kind of fire up and start puttering, but
right. Kind of lulls you to sleep.
It does, yeah. So it like lulled me back to sleep and then started hearing a little more movement. And so I got up and you know, went and helped out a little bit. Like, well, not really helped out, just more like bugged the guys probably.
Right. But
set up the fishing rig and, you know, like we ended up having a couple poles out. And yeah, it was pretty cool to see the whole operation.
Were you successful? Did you catch anything?
Yeah, yeah. We all caught something, I think. I ended up kind of, I hooked into a marlin, but we weren't rigged for marlin, so they ended up having to cut it because he just kept running and he was going to spool the line, so
right.
They cut it. And then I think all of us got hooked into a tuna.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so nothing huge. Like,
right.
I think it was like somewhere from like my shoulder down to a little bit further than my waist. Like I could hold it, you mm-hmm. know, pretty easy, but it was, you know, pretty big. And
yeah, they get pretty big, like a couple hundred pounds at least, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, they get huge. Like my brother-in-law, my older brother-in-law, he caught one that, I mean, like, and he's 6'5", I think, and he had the tail up by his chin and right. The head was on the ground, the head of the tuna, you know? And he's got both hands on him, he's a pretty right. big guy, you know? So, dang.
So probably like 300 or 400 pounds. Probably. Yeah, I mean, I have no
yeah,
idea.
I probably could have fit like 10 of my little tunas inside that one. You know, like mine was a little guy. But then the guy had his own personal chef too. And so like I remember he was a captain. I don't know, but someone cooked it up. We had like a feast at his place that night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, super cool. So we got the boat. Went and cleaned up, came back and ate fresh tuna because the captain or somebody was like, and maybe it was George Harms himself, was like, I mean, you got to have it like right away. Mm-hmm. It's so different. And because what happened, we went and ate and then we took the leftovers with us home to where we were staying. Mm-hmm. And he was right. I mean, the next night it was good, but right. you could taste the difference, you know, mm-hmm. between like that night, like fresh, only a couple hour old tuna to, you know, like 24 hours later, you could really tell the difference. Still really good, but not quite that,
man, right.
I mean, different world fresh. It's crazy. And being a landlocked fellow like I have been most of my life, you know, I
right.
never had fresh fish like that, you know.
But, it was like trout and bass around here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you guys have around here, trout?
Trout and walleye is kind of the big two, perch, kokanee, salmon.
Okay,
yeah, a lot
right,
of people go for the kokanee salmon too. And whitefish. I've been talking to a bunch of my fly fishing buddies about whitefish, and it seemed like as a kid out here, I was catching them all the time. And mm-hmm. my great grandpa and my family weren't really like fans of them, so we just throw them back and never thought anything of them. But I heard it's like really good eating.
I think in Maine, Michigan, when we go up there, Michigan and Wisconsin, that's a big, like, whitefish is like the big fish.
Like the one
not
you want.
Not the big fish, no. But like when you go and you get like fish and chips from like the bar or store, or
yeah.
I think it's mostly whitefish up there for.
Oh, gotcha. That's what I've kind of heard too. Yeah. Like, you know, they could do a fish fryer for fish and chips.
Yeah.
Know, like whitefish is good for it. And then we have a lingcod out here, burbot is another name for it. Have mm-hmm. you seen those?
I've had lingcod before, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah. You know,
like a giant tadpole.
Right.
Yeah. He's weird looking. Man. Like, and old boys in Whitehall were telling me, like, oh, yeah, this one dark night I caught one at, what reservoir is down there? Clark Canyon Reservoir, maybe? Yeah, I think it was Clark Canyon Reservoir. Mm-hmm. Like, wrapped around my arm like a snake. They're like a freshwater eel. And I'm like, hearing all these gnarly stories as a kid. I'm like, holy cow, this thing's like in the river too. And like, oh yeah, you know, like, and I saw one try it up on the Jefferson River one time outside of Whitehall, and like, it looked even more freaky because this thing's all, you know, there's nothing left of it really. And I'm like, what in the world, you know? And then one night I'm out at my uncle's place, on Holter, and, he's got the floating docks, and I reel one in, and it's dark, like really dark. Mm-hmm. And, we had been celebrating something, so I was pretty tuned up. Like, I'd drank a little bit more than, you know, beyond sober at this point. So, like, I'm reeling it in, and I'm fighting it, and it's all good. And then, but it's so dark, I can't really see what I have on the end of my line. I can see it looks different. So, like, lift it up, and it swings at my face. And I'm like, what in the... And I about fall off the back of the dock, and I'm like, what in the world? And then, so then I, like, kind of, I think I fell on my butt, and then it, like, landed next to me, so I grabbed it so it wouldn't get in the water, and right. It's, yeah, it felt even kind of weird, but it's just a bit, like, a big tadpole. Mm-hmm. I was, like, expecting it, like, I was, like, looking at it, like, waiting for it to wrap around my arm or something, but I don't know if they can. I don't know, maybe they can, like, you know, like an armadillo, like a baby right. armadillo can go in the ball, but yeah. once they get bigger, I don't think they can ball up, you yeah. know?
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's the case with a Linka, but, yeah, it freaked me out, but also I was, like, heard they tasted good, so I was like, you know, a lot of people call them poor man lobster,
right? Yeah.
So I was like, I'm keeping this sucker, you know. So I was ready to go in the water with it if I had to, and yeah. It was pretty good. Me and my dad cooked it up, and you know, put lots of butter on it, and it was really good.
Maybe it was one of those fishing stories when it starts out like 2 inches long, and by the time you're in the story, it's like 5 feet. I caught this 5 foot bass. Monster.
Yeah,
and it's like, no, that was more like an inch and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably the same story.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, it grows every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm an old man, that lingcod will be 10 feet long. Yeah. My arm was halfway in his mouth.
Wrapped around my waist.
Yeah, it's like a sea monster.
That's
right. Yeah. Oh, that'll be good. I gotta build that story for when I'm old and grandbabies.
Yeah.
Out there on Holter Lake. Middle of the night.
When you write your memoirs.
Yeah. Back then, cell phones didn't really work.
There was no cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still kind of a cool spot because it's in the canyon, so you can't get any cell phone service. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice. I'm really, really value those spots, you know, where you can go and not get any cell phone service anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice to disconnect. Yeah, I almost said deconnect. What am I saying?
Disconnect to decompress.
Decompress, yeah. That's well put. Disconnect to decompress.
Yeah.
It's important.
It is very important.
You get wired in all the time, and like I try to make, it's hard because I'm always trying to like update stuff on the Instagram for the podcast, and like if something hits me, you know, I'm like, oh man, that'd be cool to, you know, throw that out there or whatever it might be, and, and like an idea. And so it's tough that way, but I try to like disconnect when I come home, you know, like I try to, if I'm going to upload stuff, I do on the ride home or after the gym or whatever. And then when I get home, I try to like put my phone by the door and just like, there it is, you know, leave that there. And then, maybe get to it after, you know, the kiddo's down and everybody's, you know, asleep, and spend a little, like, try to cut myself out like a half hour, like go on there, do whatever, and then, you know, call it quits for the night. So I don't get locked in. It's so easy, man, to spiral down.
Sucks you in.
Yeah, because I get on dumb stuff, you know, start looking up, like, stuff on Craigslist or whatever, you know, like that. It's like, oh, man, I wonder if I can find one of those, you know, like a, just like a Mr. Buddy heater for the Airstream, you know. Because last year I was podcasting, I want to say it was with the wind chill, I was somewhere between 20 and 30 below with wind chill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one podcast, the Patrick Valentine one, Smoke Jumper out of NCSB, and... man, and I hope I didn't repeat the story because I think it's good that we brought this up, and basically just me rambling. I'm just be letting you talk, but
no, you're fine.
Hey, we'll get back to you. But I want to share this is that, so like, it's wicked cold. Like it's, I mean, it is blowing snow hard. Like my buddy Patrick Valentine and Garrett Stearman were coming out. Kind of grew up with Garrett Stearman in Whitehall, like. You know, and got to know him more when we got in fire together and stuff, you know, knew his dad real well. He was FMO, when I first got started, but, or right before I just got started, but you know, fires, especially back then, was like small family, you
right?
know?
Yeah.
And then Whitehall being small, everybody knows everybody, but anyways, those boys, you know, and, Garrett Stearman's on Lewis and Clark Hot Shots and, you know, that kind of tough wildland, you know, country boys from Montana come out in a blizzard, you know, like I try to wave them off cause they're coming from Missoula. And I was like, man, there's a little pass between Missoula and Lolo. And I'm like, if you guys don't want to, totally get it. You know, like right, yeah. we can do this another time, you know. And then I had a podcast the next morning with Chris Johnson, CJ, you know, and like that one I really didn't want to miss because he's a busy guy. And we were trying to promote the fire and ice tournament, the hockey tournament.
Oh, right, yeah.
And the putt and pull, you know, mm-hmm. fundraiser for the Wildland Firefighter Foundation. Both proceeds go to the Firefighter Foundation, mm-hmm. but a putt and pull is kind of more focused on that. So I'm like, man, I got to get that one done. And but I really wanted to interview Patrick Valentine because he worked at NCSB and I worked at NCSB. So like get to talk about like his experiences, share my experiences. And
right.
Yeah, it's just kind of special to me. So anyways, good here. We do the podcast. It is really cold. And I mean, I got a bunch of space heaters and this thing going. We're keeping it okay. You know, right. Like it's not bad, but it's not, we're still in our sweatshirts. And at the end of the podcast, the lights in here like flicker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's strange. It was so cold that it was starting to drain the battery on this thing, you know, even though it was plugged in.
Right.
So I was like, holy cow, man. So like the lights were dimming as we were going and then they started kind of surging a little bit. And I was like, well, that's not good. And then we wrap it up and I'm like trying to get the guys out of here before, you know, it gets mm-hmm. worse because it's supposed to get worse throughout the night.
Right.
And you can't barely see across my driveway at this point. So, but I'm staring at my cabin, you know, I'm like man, those lights are flicking, I think, too, you know, but it's hard because the snow's blowing. So yeah. That looks like a bad sign, you know. And at the time, I know my wood burner's not going, you know.
Right.
And, you know, my kiddo's in there pretty young. So I'm like, that's like priority, is make sure that place stays warm. So,
yeah.
So the boys being awesome guys they are, man, like, and you know, just people in the forest service, I think, man, are just awesome helpers. Like, we're all helpers because we're all like our stewards of the forest. And I think this is forest service wide. I don't think it's just or any kind of outdoorsy folks, you know. I think are like this. And so it's not just fire and maybe and probably not just forest service, just outdoor folks and small town folks are always helping each other out. So like, I don't have this thing hooked up, so but I gotta be on the road at like 5:30, 6 in the morning, I think, mm-hmm. to meet CJ. And so I'm like, they're like, what do you guys got going on now? You guys gonna go back and, you know, tear up the town? And they're like, ah, no, we got nothing going on. We're just gonna head back and, I don't know, like, turn a movie or something. I can't remember. They had just kind of like pretty tame. And I was like, oh, all right. And they're like, what do you got going on? I'm like, oh, I gotta get this thing hooked up and get it ready for tomorrow. So, you know, I'm just be doing that. And they're like, you need help? I'm like, nah, I can do it. No big deal. Like, oh man, we got you. We'll help you out.
Right.
So these guys are like a pit crew, and thank God they stuck around because I didn't know it, but I picked up a nail in the sidewall of the trailer tire. Mm-hmm. So it was jacked up like it is now. So when I put it back down and it sat down on the tire, it went right to the rim.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh no. And just as that happens, the power goes out. So my cabin, my house is black. And I'm like, so I look over and see that. And I'm like, and you know, it's 20 to 30 below, you know, I'm like, that's not going to stay warm very long.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, boys, I'll be right back. And they're like, where's the tire? And it was in my shed. And I was like, and they're like, all right, we got it. And I didn't tell them anything else.
Right.
You know, I was just like, I'm like, you know, you guys don't have to, I can get it back in a minute. You know, and I go inside and I get the fire going real quick and help my wife get all the lanterns going. We got a bunch of, you know, this is like kerosene lanterns.
Yeah.
What's the ones that like have the, like the oil? Yeah, it's kerosene. Right?
Yeah, that's kerosene.
Yeah. So we got a bunch of kerosene lanterns going and some candles. So then I run back out. The boys already have the tire off, changed, and the truck about to hook up to the Airstream, except for I had used the hitch. I put the hitch on a different rig or something, so I had to track down the hitch. But, I mean, they had everything about done. You know, I was like, geez, you guys are amazing. And then something else happened, and I mean, it is getting gnarly at this point. So I was like, man, you guys want to stay the night? I'm like, nah, man, this is great. I'm like, well, let me know when you get there. And, I mean, they left and, like, disappeared into the storm. And I was like, I wish I had a cool video. It was epic, man. They're an old Toyota Tacoma, I think, you know, and just some tough dudes, you know. It was super cool, and my buddy Stearman checked in with me when he got back, so I felt good about him being there, and just good times, man.
Yeah.
So, gotta get the heater going. I don't remember what I got on that story. Do you remember?
That's a funny story. No, it's about friends and how they're helpful they are. That's really what your story was about.
Yeah, I guess. That's kind of like part of the stuff I'm trying to spread with the old podcast here is, you know, like sharing love a little bit, you know, and just the community and stuff. And that's what I'm trying to build here, you know, like I got a few fundraisers that I'm working on for maybe possibly this winter or next year. So really trying to do some off-season stuff. Like I'd I don't know if it's going to happen, but I had a basketball, a freelancing basketball tournament that I was working with the Trapper Creek Job Corps to get.
Nice.
Yeah, right now it would just be like the Bitterroot National Forest and kind of a tournament between each like duty station. So it'd be like West Fork Ranger Station, Trapper Creek Job Corps, Darby and Sula, or if we got enough folks, maybe split to Darby and Sula, and then Stevensville, and then maybe the SO Hamilton if they could, you know, get together like a 3-on-3 team. So keep it simple in the beginning, see how many people like are interested, and then, you know, maybe do like Darby Sula team, Stevensville team, Hamilton, Trapper, and West Fork, and then if I get more interest, then expand it, you know, to more locations. Yeah,
that'd
then,
be good.
Then have like a trophy and just an excuse to get folks together in the off season, because in Montana it gets pretty dark, you know, in the those like late December, January months. So we could do something in January after the New Year's, you know, and just get some folks back together, because, you know, mental health is pretty tough thing, especially in the wild animal world.
Yeah, you could probably get, I don't know, I've never been to any of the gyms in Montana or here, but I'm sure one of the gyms has a big, you know, gymnasium you could probably.
Oh, true. Like even like the YMCA or something.
Like the YMCA, be like, hey, can you guys host?
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, even if they charge like a nominal fee, it wouldn't be that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And Missoula being the kind of hub area, you know, you got like little shots are there. And I guess I forgot to bring in the Bitterroot shots in my tournament. But like in the basketball thing, I, you know, there's the kind of shots, as you know, shots kind of scatter to the wind in the winter.
Yes.
So it might be kind of harder to reel in a few of those folks. But yeah, like Bitterroot shots are definitely included in my original.
Yeah. You could do, are we Western Montana? Where we're at.
Oh, yeah, Western Montana.
Like the forest of the Western Montana could be part of your
competition. Yeah, maybe that. Man, that'd be kind of cool. You know, like, especially how big the forests are getting. You know, you could almost do all the forests in Region 1.
Yeah, you could.
And because, like, you know, the Custer-Gallatin just combining a few years ago, that one, you know, the Gallatin was not huge by itself, but decent. And the Custer was pretty big by itself, and now it's huge.
Yeah.
You know, Custer-Gallatin is ginormous. Like, you go West Yellowstone to, is it Ashland or something way out there east? Holy.
Yeah, it might be hard, kind of hard for people to get together, but you could at least start it, you know, be like, hey, this is what we're doing. If you guys are interested, let me know and come on down. I'm sure you can get local guys easily.
That's what I was thinking, at least, but for something small and then build it as it goes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like Civic Center in Butte is a pretty big thing. But yeah, you know, part of this podcast is just that, you know, trying to help out and get more folks together, because we, you know, you go to these big fire camps and everyone gets together, and especially guys who've been in the fire world as long as us, like, I mean, it'd be kind of hard to go to a fire camp when you've been in this thing long enough that you wouldn't recognize somebody, you know?
It's amazing how often you, like, walk by and you're like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in 20 years. I can't remember his name, but I know him.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. And then people change, right? Like my friend Kenny, who's on, I don't know where he's at now, but he's on Hell in a Shots for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, the only reason why, like, it pinged me is because his voice was the same, but he looked totally different.
You know? Oh, yeah, right.
I was like, oh, shoot. And it took me a hot second, and then, like, my brain caught up, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, like, but I hadn't seen him, like you said, in 5 years or more, you know, like, maybe longer.
Right.
And, yeah, it was cool, man, to, like, a real little reunion every time you go to a big fire camp.
Yeah, sometimes you'll walk by and somebody, you're like, hey, I know that guy. What's his name? I can't
remember. Yeah, where do I know this guy?
And you're just, it's, like, so common, you can't remember people. Hey, how's it going? You're just, like, totally blowing off. You know, you're like, reintroduce yourself at all. It's just kind of like that thing where you just like know each other, but you don't even say who you are anymore. But
yeah, it's like, man, it's been a while. Where you been?
Yeah,
you know, or else you're like, I know you. How do I know you? Because I've had that where like, had a where'd you work in this year? You know,
right.
No, it wasn't that. And you know, how about back in 2012?
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was on that fire. And you're like, kind of pieced together in that.
Yeah, because people ask me, hey, were you on this fire? And I was like, or were you in the fire and such and such? I was like, well, let me know where it was and what time frame. I'll tell you if I was there or not.
Oh, I know, dude.
Fire's just blending. I don't know fire names anymore. Just,
I don't. I know. Like, it used to stick in my head pretty good, especially the big ones, but it feels like. What were you starting Wild on Fire?
2002.
Yeah, so you started before things were going bananas, too. Like, it seemed like. Because I started in 08, and then 9, 10 were pretty soft years. I mean, there were some bigger fires, but like, I didn't get on really anything. The Wallow Fire was in 10, wasn't it?
I think so.
I think the Wallow Fire was then. And, you know, so that was like kind of a sign to come, right? Because Wallow was huge.
Yeah.
From Arizona to New Mexico. And it was like just one of the bigger fires that we'd experienced in modern days, you know? And now, like, I don't know. I'd like to, I should know this, but like the current numbers, you know, whenever the Wallow even stands on like the historical size of, you know, big fires. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I remember that being like, well, it was kind of busy, you know, and I mean, up in like Hondo, New Mexico, and, you know, a few different places, and back up to Montana and a little run on some fires. And then 2011, things got real busy, you mm-hmm. know, and then 12, things got really, really busy. And, I mean, 12 was busy, like, from start to finish for me. It was, you know, felt probably the closest thing to, like, a fire season is now, kind of. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess the last couple of years have been a little bit more tame, at least up here. But,
yeah.
I mean, we're getting, like, tons of fires around the district. And then I was on a bunch of big fires. I'm going to Great Northern that year in 12 and traveling all over, you know, and mm-hmm. hit up eastern Montana on some coal seam fires and just a lot of different activity that year, man. It's so busy. And then, yeah.
Yeah, when I started, let's see, 02, we had the Grand Prix and the Old Fire. And
in NorCal?
No, Southern California.
Southern Cal.
Mm-hmm. San Bernardino area.
Oof. What year, time of year was that?
It was October.
Oh, so not, I was like picturing like August and just no, super hot.
It was a later one. And burned a bunch of houses down.
That's scary. That's scary time of year though, because of the Santa Ana winds.
Yeah. And I remember going down the street, like IAing the Old Fire, and the IC said, "Save whatever houses you can. If you can't save it, move on to the next one."
Ooh.
And so we like watched houses burn to the ground. Dang. You couldn't do anything about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, nothing you can do.
And then when I came to the, I was in the Park Service then as a seasonal, and then 04 I got my permanent job in Lassen as an apprentice. And I think it was like 05 or 06, we took 212, which is, an urban interface.
Yeah.
And they showed pictures of like the big fires, you know, in Southern California. Like, oh, if you go to these fires, you know, that's once in your career. And it's not. It's been like every year since I've been in. So
yeah.
We're like at 22 years of fire, and I've seen huge fires every year.
And yeah. Like, a couple year-round seasons in California, yes. You know, like things that just didn't end.
Well, that was the thing. Like in Northern California, our fire season would end in, we'll say, September, because the snow would fall, right?
Yeah.
In September. And then October, we'd always go down to SoCal for, you know, call it Club Fed.
Club Fed,
you
know, yeah.
We'd hang out. But we'd get fires quite a bit down there. But,
yeah.
You know, we'd always stage for the Santa Ana winds. And then
yeah.
We were on the Santa Barbara fire a couple years ago and up in Montecito.
Oh.
Where they have like multi-million-dollar houses, like Oprah's houses there. And
oh, no.
And all the hillside got slicked off, and then the rains came and it all washed them all the hills away.
Oh, yeah.
That was big news a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, all that vegetation goes away, and then you get those big rains and the mudslides and all the other nasty things. It's such a compounding event, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, big fire is so destructive in itself, and then it's, you know, leads to other more destructive things down the road, too. Yeah, I would say probably more destructive depending on the area, I guess. Yeah. I was gonna hold that back for a second. Like, those mudslides pretty gnarly. You know?
Yeah, I think the mudslides are usually, because you can't stop a mudslide. I mean, at least a fire, you can do your defensible space and
kind of get away.
Hope for the best, with as long as you know you have your space and you can escape. And then, but
yeah,
the mud's just gonna come, and regardless of what you do, it's gonna come down. Gravity comes up the hill and goes down the hill.
It's so fast. You know, like those folks who got caught up in Washington, killed a bunch of folks on that. One of my friend Kazi was on the recovery effort, and man, he said he'll never be the same.
Yeah.
You know, that was brutal. You know, having to go in there every day and recovering more people and horrible stuff.
Yep.
So,
well, we're getting better at it, though. I mean,
yeah, I was gonna say management.
We're slowly fixing the 100 years of.
Yeah. Yes. So, folks who don't know, I'll give a little background on what Mike was getting at there about fixing. So, 1910, the big fires come through, Great Burn. You know, like it. Just west of us here in the Bitter, it's where kind of the origin was, right? And it cruised up into Idaho and
Idaho.
Wallace area.
Oregon.
Oregon, yeah.
It was like 10 million acres? I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Huge. Rolling. Nothing anyone could do at the time to stop it, you know, and that's where Pulaski, the tool we use, Ed Pulaski was involved, saved some folks in a cave in Wallace,
mm-hmm.
and almost died doing it. It had to hold some people at gunpoint, had his crew at gunpoint to keep him in the cave because it was that narrow of a situation. And he knew, in his wisdom, he knew that there was no way they were going to run it. Because that's the thing, it's moving like a freight train. Like the written reports of the 1910 fire is just insane. The sound of it coming up the valley. So like if anyone's driven through Wallace, Idaho, pretty narrow corridor, as I-90 runs through there. And so to be able to hear something that crazy loud coming at you and there's nothing you can do, oh, man, there's no way you're outrunning it, you know? So Ed Pulaski knew to keep his folks alive to shove them in that cave, which was a mine, I think, right?
Yeah, it was a mine.
Yeah, and had to use his gun. Yep. Luckily, he had one to keep his crew in there, and then he was at the front of the cave and just about killed him.
Yeah, they thought he was dead, and I think they climbed over his body because they didn't think he was alive, and then
they rose up from the ashes.
Yeah, I checked him. And
yeah, I think he lost an eye or something because of it.
Something crazy.
He's
like
pretty beat up afterwards, and then I think it was after that he created the tool of the Pulaski, I think, right?
I think it was, I don't know if he created it or it was just named after him, but I know it was named after him for sure. I don't know if
I thought he was the creator. I thought
he might be the creator.
The mastermind behind
the
Pulaski.
We'll have to Google it.
Yeah.
Google it.
Yeah, if you're listening, check it out. Let us know. Let us know what you find.
Put it in the comments.
Yeah, put it in the comments. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was him. I thought he engineered it, but yeah, either way.
Might have. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, because I think at the time they were using shovels and rakes, and they were just they needed a more multi-tool.
Right, just drive down the road and grab whoever's in the bar.
Yeah, Wranglers and cowboy boots and T-shirts.
Come fight fires with us, and then
those little videos are wild.
Yeah, and then after that, it was out by 10 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah,
every fire,
and that didn't help.
And then we did that we were really good at that for a long time.
Man,
and then I think the science finally, I'd say probably.
Pretty recent.
Well, 10, I guess it's debatable, 10 and 20 years ago, but definitely 10 years ago was people were understanding what we did to the environment and what we need to fix. And there's still a lot of pushback from, people saying, we need to suppress all fires. But
people don't really understand.
And I think it's getting better now that education is becoming more widespread. And people are, so that's what we do nowadays. We do all kinds of, we do mechanical thinning. We do prescribed burning, and natural thinning with animals and which is funny because when I worked on the Shasta Trinity for a year, I was like, what? Because they're talking about putting livestock out there on the hillsides, like a breaker between the road and people's houses, and I was like, why don't you just let the goats take care of it? Because goats eat everything. Over the ground, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, the goats will get away, and then you'll have all these problems. It's like, no, you just put a nice fence where they're at. When they clean that spot up, you put the fence farther away. That way.
Man. I heard they're working on some, collars for because, man, I don't want to give, I don't know how much I can say about this, because one of our friends, a group that he's working with, is talking about this. Mm-hmm. A team that's working on a collared system to help keep livestock in a general area without having to use a fence.
Hmm. Well, because they have the invisible fence for dogs.
Yeah,
so that's kind of similar. You couldn't expand that out, but I don't know. Yeah. People are just so worried about things sometimes.
I'm working on GPS, I think. You know.
So if you goats get away.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
No, goats reproduce pretty fast. And and someone else is probably, if it got away, it might be in someone else's yard, and they're probably happy to have him.
Exactly. So, look at this free goat I got.
Yeah,
this is so cool.
Yeah, a little pet.
Yeah.
And they help you get rid of everything that could be bad. And two, so my saying there is you get rid of all that vegetation, especially some of those big bushes that carry a lot of heat and, are big fuel sources, to a little ground fire that's going to raise through, but there's not a lot of fuel to carry it if it's all grazed down to, stubble.
Yep.
So versus all these, especially in California, where you can get all that big gnarly brush.
Oh, yeah, and definitely.
That's a ladder fuel to get into.
It burns every year because it just keeps coming back. So.
Yeah, it grows back and it's volatile. And then that's what helps get it up in the treetops, where you get ladder fuel, they call it, to a crown fire where it's in the top of the trees, and that crown fire is...
It just raises a lot of... Races right along.
Yeah, so hard to stop a crown fire. I mean...
Yeah.
Not much you can do with that, you know? So...
Wait till the weather comes in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, try to get out of the way.
I still think we do. I think we don't fight fire, we manage fire in big... Really, everything we do doesn't really stop the fire. We kind of corral it and put it where we hope we want it to go.
Yeah, and try to keep it away from things.
Yeah, keep it away from things. But, I mean, at least that's my theory. I'm sure people are like, no, we fight fire, we put it down. It's like, no, do you really? I mean,
no. Because even on small fires, the reason why, and for folks who don't know, the reason why we dig a line around a fire is to take the fuel source away and contain it into a small area. Like if you have a quarter acre fire, or a tenth of an acre fire is better. It'll burn that tenth of an acre, But as long as you keep it there, right, by digging a line around, so, you know, fire can't burn dirt. So you have your bare mineral soil, usually 18 inches, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you keep it contained in that, and basically it consumes itself, and you stir it around and help, you know, kind of put some bigger stuff out if you can, break up some yeah. larger fuels, like, you know, dead and down logs. But other than that, you just kind of babysit it for, you know.
All right, a couple of days.
A couple of days, I was going to say, up to, you know, a few days, and it's pretty much done then, you know.
Right.
But other than the, you know, taking the fuel away, we're not really doing a whole lot, no. You know. And big fires the same way.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they put bucket up. That's why they have bucket drops on, because it's like slowing it down, but it's not, you're not going to put a Rory fire with 800 gallons of water.
Yeah. Build a box.
Yeah.
And for folks who are listening who don't really understand that too, is like, you're like big box, you know, and they're like, oh, the big box that we're trying to build here is like usually off roads, and you box in the fire. And the fire, the roads are like fire lines, so it's like, you know, you're not going to burn asphalt, you're not going to burn dirt roads, so you can box it in using, or some natural features like water, right. You know, then fires shouldn't escape it, so it's like a bigger containment ring.
Yeah.
Same thing as like digging a line around a fire, but just with natural barriers and man-made barriers like roads and rivers and lakes, rocks, yeah, I don't lakes, know, other things. Lakes.
Yeah, whatever doesn't burn.
Yeah, whatever doesn't burn. Yeah, non-burnable things are on the fire. Yeah, that's the best way to put it. So, but that actually leads to what I was going to ask you. We haven't really been got on the list here too much, but we'll circle back down to the GORUCK you went to right after we talked last time. But
right,
prescribed fire. It's kind of prescribed fire season, right?
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah, especially
also it's still as well in Missouri right now. It's like 80 degrees.
Oh, so
which is miserable. Geez. And we've had several fires this past week. I don't know how.
Oh, really?
I don't really pay attention to how big they are because I'm here, obviously. So
yeah.
So I just get the text messages that they're saying, and they always come with maps. But
oh, gotcha.
People there have, because we have hardwoods, so we have like maple and just big leaf trees.
Oh yeah.
And so they lose their leaves every year, and people just they like turkey hunting.
Yeah.
And the turkeys love acorns, so they make it easy for the turkeys to get to the acorns by burning off the ground, burning off the leaf litter.
Oh, yeah, the turkey can get the acorn then easier.
And same with the, plus you can see better because it's overgrown.
Oh, yeah.
And same with the deer. The deer like the acorns too, so they burn their land off so they can
bring in the deers.
Yeah. But nice. And then last year, I think this year we've got like 80,000 acres of aerial ignition we're doing.
Oh wow!
So basically, we have a helicopter, which is a 407. We have a machine that goes, it's called a Red Dragon. And it goes on the left-hand side, so if the helicopter's facing, you use clock tower, clock numbers, so the 12 is straight ahead is 12 o'clock, and then we hang out the 3 o'clock door. And then we have, we call them ping pong balls, they're filled with potassium managamate.
Managamate, that's a lot to say.
It is.
Potassium managamate.
Yes. And basically they get injected with antifreeze. And they go through them, and then they drop down, and they burn them between like 30 seconds to a minute, depending on temperature. And
so, I guess to.
So basically, we have a part of the map that we want to light fires on, and we go, you know, like north, south, or east, west, depending on the terrain, and then how fast the helicopter goes is how far apart the spheres land, and they burn out in a circle at a controlled rate.
Yeah.
And
that chemical concoction is combustible, right? That's why, like, so when the sphere or the ping pong ball leaves the mechanism in the side of the air, flying helicopter,
right. It's not on fire.
It's not on fire, right? Yeah.
As it falls down and it lands on the ground, then it'll start on fire.
Then it combusts, right?
Yeah, then it combusts.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a way to explain that so folks would understand. I was like, I'm gonna try to science this up, even though I've no idea. You know, I'm not very intelligent in that world, but
you're good.
Yeah, I think we muddled our way through it.
Yeah.
So
you can Google it. Just Google aerial ignition, and there's a lot of videos that show you exactly how they do it.
Pretty cool, and a really good way to get a lot of fire on the ground.
Oh yeah, it's really safe because you're only really endangering three people per se. You know, in case something catastrophic happens, the helicopter goes down. There's usually only three people in the helicopter.
Yeah.
As opposed to like putting people on the line where you're trying to like hike up and down super steep hills.
Yeah.
For like 10,000 acres plus, you know.
And so many more hazards involved there, you know. And you can lose track of people.
And you can lose track of people. And
Yeah, it could start. Someone starts burning underneath another person just because they're not aware. Especially fatigue plays in. You kind of lose. You could lose your spot. You know, in the firing order, and yeah, bad stuff can happen. Which we're pretty good. We do so. That's pretty rare, but just this other hazards that you don't have to worry about when you're aerial ignitions.
And the other ignition we do is ground ignition, where you just have it's a mixture of diesel fuel and regular gasoline.
Yeah.
And it's under a drip torch, so it comes out of a certain stream. You just, there's different patterns you can use. You can use drip pattern, which is just like walking in a straight line, or you can do like dripping pattern where you like put a little bit down and then you move, you know, a certain distance more and you put a little more down, and then it all depends on what you want to accomplish.
How much fire you want to put on the ground. And
because the closer your strips are, the less fire you have. Well, the farther, because it doesn't build enough heat.
Yeah.
Where if they're farther away, then you can, you know, then you get more intense fire.
Yeah.
It has a chance to like run up the hill faster.
Yeah, yeah. Increase the fire intensity. Yeah. Depending on your strips. Then if you want to get fancy, there's a chevron.
Oh, chevron.
The old chevron. Yeah.
Is it a chevron?
Only done the chevron a few times in my life. And it sounds like what we're saying, it's like a shamrock kind of looking.
Yeah. So it's like a V, an inverted V.
Yeah.
So if like say if you're like walking, you want to save a tree, you go above the tree and then like be down on the other side of the tree.
Yeah, kind of squiggly little thing.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain unless you've, I've only done it like.
It's really hard to explain. It's even harder to.
You never really do it.
No, never.
It's all either strip or drip or a spot.
And the only reason why I even like realized we were doing it is because someone was like joking like, chevron.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that is that, you know. But like you said, it's just more of like a common sense thing if you're trying to like not to put a bunch of heat underneath a big old gross tree.
So yeah.
You do the chevron to save it. Yeah. But, and then the other, you guys don't mess with this, is it terra torch?
Yeah, they do have the terra torch, which also which hangs below the helicopter.
Oh.
And it's got a, I don't know what, some sort of mixture it uses. That.
Yeah.
And then that's controlled by the pilot. So usually it's just the pilot himself in the helicopter.
Oh, gotcha. Is it on like a cable?
Yeah, it's like a, it kind of looks like a, for the one I've seen is like a 55-gallon drum on its side. So it's vertical underneath the helicopter. And then it's got like a big tube that goes out and then it drips out in front within the.
Yeah, almost like a giant drip torch, right?
Yeah, giant drip torch. So the fuel in the drum and then it goes through the machine, through the pipe somehow.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's hydraulically done that way, and then like falls down.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing. I've only seen it like once or twice.
Yeah, I think they use it here quite a, like in the West quite a bit.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot of, because I think with our burning conditions, it's usually not real receptive because
because that brings a lot of heat.
Yeah,
you can have a lot of more fire, intense fire, because that'll go through. Like if you want to burn up trees, you can burn on top of trees, and it'll catch on fire because it's like glue, kind of a gluey substance.
And what, paste, huh?
Yeah, like a paste, a pasty substance.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because, you know, it seems like our burn windows, especially because, you know, like everyone's pretty worried about losing one, which is normal, you know, so it's like we're burning when it's maybe not quite the best time to be burning. So, like, something like that, a terra torch kind of comes in. Because I've seen, you know, terra torch that was on a trailer too,
and I was walking next to it. Yeah, we use that in Missouri because we'll call it black lining.
That's what they're doing. Yep.
So they'll burn in front of the helicopter. They'll light off the usually a road.
Yep.
And that way the helicopter knows exactly where, like, because you can't really see like geographic features in the.
Yeah, in Texas, that we were doing, we'd like ring the whole area, and then like you said, the helicopter come by doing strips like horizontal or perpendicular, no, what,
parallel
paralleling, and then like you said, they could see the perimeter really well
from what
we lit off, and then stay inside prescription. And then I think one day we had a couple squirrely winds come up and pushed a few ping pongs into a different spot, but it wasn't a big deal because we're all lined out, you know, watching it.
Yeah, the nice thing about the is we can shut it off, you know, really quickly, and it's like done in like a second or two. So
yeah.
Whereas the terra torch takes a little longer to.
Yeah, and imagine if that thing got out of, you know, got outside the burn area and like put down some
fire. A little more squirrely.
it might be a little more of an effort versus like just chasing down some spheres, you know, some ping pongs and put them out. Yeah, but it's nice, though, because you can cover so much more ground, and it just, you know, saves the fire folks on the ground. And you're not having to suck as much smoke as a fire person on the ground, you know, like, kind of back off and make sure it's going to stay within containment. But other than that, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Creeping up our time. I just don't want to keep you too long. You got jujitsu tonight.
That's right.
But that kind of actually works out because go Ruck.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess to wrap up fire season. So typically in the West, our burn windows are like spring and fall. Mm-hmm. You know, and we watch the moisture and, you know, and storms and the fuels, and you know, make sure it's receptive. It's pretty sensitive dance here in the Northwest for burn windows. We have pile burning, which you can kind of burn whatever and can burn throughout the winter typically, but then you have to worry about smoke and there's something with smoke. So like you don't want to smoke out of community. And
right.
There's like a term for it, but I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. They call it smoke management.
Smoke management, yeah.
You want to have good aerial
lift.
Mixing height.
Yeah.
Which is where the smoke goes in the air and then blows away.
Because
sometimes I can never get this straight. So high pressure puts the top as stable air is. I'm gonna screw this up. I know I am.
I think you want stable because I want to say
stable air. Yeah, stable air lets it go up, and then the unstable air is like a top on like your stove, like putting a top on your.
Oh.
Like boiling water.
Put a lid on
like this. Yeah, thank you.
I got your back.
I couldn't think of.
No, yeah, we muddle on our way through. It's one of those things that like you just do it so long that you don't think about it.
Right.
So, like when someone says it, you're like, oh yeah, I get it.
Yeah, but I can never remember explaining it correctly.
Yeah, when you gotta like regurgitate to somebody else, you're like, well, there's some atmosphere stuff, and you know, there's,
right.
Yeah.
You want the air where it goes up and out, not like sits.
Yeah, you end up getting like an inversion layer,
right,
which happens a lot here in the winter. And then that's like you said, it's like putting a cap, you know, like a, it doesn't allow the smoke to escape into the atmosphere like it should. So it ends up putting a lid on the valley, and then it gets stuck. It'll hit that lid, like, and then it allows the smoke to accumulate like over a community or something.
Yeah.
We don't want smoke out of community.
Right. It's like closing your damper on your fireplace.
Yeah.
That's so good.
That damper. Yeah. That's, yeah.
And you open your damper and the smoke goes up. That's what it is.
Yeah. That's a really good way. Damper's a flap in your chimney.
Yeah.
You close it, pinches, keeps the smoke coming out. You open it, it goes vertical, lets all the smoke out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good way.
Yeah.
We got it.
We got there. took us a minute. So fire brains work. But yeah, so we got our shoulder seasons, like as in like fall, spring for Northwest typically for burning. And then in region 8 and part of region 9, I guess, you know, more, I haven't burned too much in region 9, pretty much all winter long, you can be burning and sometimes fighting fire. So that's kind of my experiences.
So we usually burn in January to like May or June, usually May. And then we get green up. So all our leaves turn green and the RHs go really, really high.
Like spring.
90s, yeah, spring in the 90s. Yeah. And then our prescribed burn season ends then. And then.
Yeah, because like once green up happens, all the plants and trees and everything start taking in water and moisture. And so it turns everything green and they come like alive. And then especially in that country, it's like impossible to burn that stuff. So you miss your window. And it's not healthy for the vegetation either at that point. But before green up, it's pretty healthy because you're getting rid of all the bad stuff, allowing the
good stuff
to grow.
All the old and small stuff that's just, you know,
choking out the good stuff.
Yeah, suppressing all the nice healthy trees.
Yeah, so you get to keep that old growth that you want. And
yeah.
Especially like some of the vines and stuff out like around Tennessee that they're trying to get rid of, you know?
Yeah, the choker vines, yeah.
Yeah, those are bad, man. They grow so fast.
They do.
Holy cow, I didn't have much experience with it until I went down there. And one of my friends who's from that area is a jumper on McCall, and he was like, yeah, man, it's a couple years ago they did it for, they're losing, what is it, like erosion. They're trying to use it for like erosion control because like a lot of the banks and stuff were eroding into the rivers or whatever was happening, sloughing, especially around the highways that they had just plowed in. And yeah, I mean, they did their job and then some, I guess, is kind of what I heard, you know, pretty gnarly. But yeah, so we're getting into that burn window for region 8.
But I guess if you like just cut the bottom of the creeper vine, it'll kill it and the tree will survive.
Really?
Regardless of how like entwined it is. Well, not maybe how entwined it is, but
yeah, but it could be pretty
it can be pretty gnarly, and it'll just like cut the bottom where the branch, the thing dies, and then it'll fall off.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of the guys was telling me about it.
That's good news, yeah, because like when I was down there, it seemed like it was pretty devastating.
Yeah.
You know, the vines were. That's good news.
Yeah.
Bring a little sunshine to the old world, you know, like mm-hmm. a podcast, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So I kind of skipped over, but like, I want to talk about the old GORUCK situation. So,
oh, yeah.
When we left off, you were heading to GORUCK.
Yes.
Like that day or the next day or something.
Yeah, a couple of days after that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did the 9/11 Memorial Ruck in Bozeman.
Yeah, Bozeman. Bozeman, Montana, yeah.
And we had an awesome time. We had some seriously awesome ladies who helped carry this big ass log that for all night long. And then, yeah, they were tough.
24-hour event?
24-hour. Yeah, 24-hour event. We did like, how many miles? I think we did like 17 miles that day.
With the log?
With the log up and down. So have you been to Bozeman? I think it's Bozeman.
You're in Bozeman, yeah.
Yeah, Bozeman. Sure. Yeah. We did the, there's a bunch of hills behind the.
Is it Lindley Park?
Lindley Park, I think.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
We did that and we walked all over Bozeman and then had a few hours off and then I did the what was the next one we did? There was the horse. Well, it was basically to honor the horsemen who were the first Green Berets after 9/11 in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
So they helped, you know, kind of combine the... They have a specific name. I can't remember the name of it right now, but...
Yeah, I'm with you.
And there's a memorial for them at the 9/11 memorial. If you go, I guess there's some stairs you can go up and you can see the statue of them. I haven't been to the 9/11 memorial yet, but no, on my list.
Yeah, same. Yeah, but, mine too. Especially on the structure fire world, you know, it's a real big deal, so...
So then we did a couple of, we did some stuff there with another log. We did a couple hills there with a big M outside of Missoula.
Oh,
not Missoula, but
Bozeman there.
Outside of Bozeman, there's a couple hills there we did. And
pretty steep.
Yeah, pretty steep. I guess there's one trail is like, well, there's one hill has like three trails. You can go like the super steep trail, which is like a quarter mile, but almost vertical. And then the other one's like, the other two are more meandering and we took the meandering ones and.
Oh, I don't blame you.
Then we shared some horse whiskey, which I guess is each like plate that goes in their whiskey bottle is part of the 9/11 towers. Oh. Specifically stamped. And I'm not a whiskey drinker, so I didn't really care for it. But yeah. I mean, I had my share. I drank, you know, camaraderie drink. But after that, I was like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Got the blood pumping a little
bit. Yeah, got like the blood going. And like I said, I'm not a whiskey drinker, so. I didn't really care for the taste of it, but so.
But good reviews from everyone else.
People love it, and I'm not sure what it's called. It might be Horse Soldier Whiskey. I think I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Have to Google it.
Yeah, people can check it out.
Yeah,
look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Give us some feedback on that. Yeah. I'll start asking more people for stuff. Get some more interaction there. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I came back that Sunday, and I've been. Training jiu-jitsu ever since, and
I had a really good experience there. I mean, like you were even telling me that your folks at the dojo here in Hamilton, wanting to stick around.
Yeah, they're all sad. I'm leaving. They're all retire and come back.
So that's we're all saying it. So I mean, maybe you should.
No, I probably should.
Down the road, man. That's the cool thing about adventure, man. You find these cool spots, and they're always there, man. You always go back to them, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. That GORUCK's a cool experience, man. Good, like, bonding experience, I think.
It is. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think it's good for folks. Especially, you know, if you've been in the military and you've been in wildland fire, probably any fire, really. Like, it's team, you know. Like it's real. Like, it's all team building and, like, real-time team building. So, like, I think folks that maybe haven't had that team atmosphere and are looking for it, like, stuff like GORUCK and other events are really good for you.
And really, all you have to do is just grab a backpack with your friends. The easiest way to do it is grab a backpack. Throw 5 or 6 books in there, you know, like decent sized books, not like
little paperbacks.
Paperback, not your goosebump sized book.
Yeah,
you know, like a real, maybe 5 or 10 pounds worth of books, and then just go for a walk.
Yeah,
you know, with your friends, and it's great. No impact, little impact. You know, build your cardio, your legs.
Yeah,
and if you want to go more advanced than that, then you can, you know, do workouts with them and.
Yeah, or follow the GORUCK folks, right?
GORUCK has a whole team. I think it's like $25 a month, and it's $25 a month gives you a patch every month.
Oh, cool!
And each month has a different theme, and then like I think it's $20 if you don't want a patch, and you still get the daily workouts from them.
Yeah,
and you can do them in your backyard or your front yard or wherever you want to. I mean, that's the great thing about it is like you know,
mobile.
Grab your buddies. If you have a Zoom meeting, just take your Zoom meeting on a walk.
Yeah.
And get outside. And
yeah, definitely.
Because I think too many people are just stuck inside and, you know.
Yeah.
Don't move around in nature. And all you really need is like 10 minutes out there and every couple hours. And
so good for you, man. Get the fresh air and get your...
Yeah.
Yeah, get your brain moving a little bit and get the, you know, like Huberman talking about the importance of just even getting the sunlight in your naked eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's really important. And, you know, we're coming on those dark months, you know, talking about like, you know, some events I'm trying to put together here in the future about, you know, for Forest Service folks, mainly wildland folks, mm-hmm. but, you know, it'll grow and I'm not going to exclude anybody, you know,
right, yeah.
show up who's interested, you know, and because, you know, depending on what the event is, I got a few I don't want to throw out there yet until I got them rolling. But
right,
they'll definitely be open to anybody who's mm-hmm. interested to come out and just be part of the event. You know, like our
yeah.
like the putting pole is a big one. If folks want to support the Wildland Firefighter Foundation, you know, you get on the golf side of it fills up kind of quick, but the trap shooting part of it doesn't. You know, it's mm-hmm. pretty big trap range, and then the social. I mean, it's open to everybody, but it's just they fill up quicker because they're part of the competition, like right. during the day. But then the evening, the social ends up at Highlander Brewery, and mm-hmm. man, they do an awesome job of you know, hooking us up there and giving us a good spot to hang. And it's just such a great event. We do an auction there, you know. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and the all those proceeds go to the Wildland Firefighter Foundation. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I mean it's just an awesome event. So it's just so cool to be a part of it. And just like we were talking earlier about just being social and being out with folks and
yeah
it's important. You know?
Even the guys at work, I don't know if they're still doing it now that it's dark at 5 o'clock, but they were doing like, you know, every Tuesday they'd go to the park and do like an hour of
Falf.
You know,
or not Falf.
Ultimate Frisbee.
Ultimate, yeah.
Yeah, and then even if only people showed up, they would still throw the Frisbee around and you know, have social time. So
social.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
It's all about building your tribe.
Yeah.
Regardless of who your tribe is.
Yeah.
Neighbors, friends, coworkers, just get out there and
totally. Yeah, build it up. And then if you like you're, you know, especially move to some area and you don't know, like, you know, find those local events like Go Ruck, they're traveling, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
you can go to their website and they have a whole events list all over the United States. All over the world, actually. I mean,
oh really?
They just had one in Germany they did. And
that's cool, man.
Next year is the 80th anniversary of not only Smokey's birthday, but also D-Day.
Yeah.
So they're doing a big, you know, 80th anniversary for D-Day. I mean, if you want to travel to France and
check it out,
have an excuse to celebrate 80 years of...
Yeah. They sent Miss Montana over there a few years back to DC3 and a couple of jumpers, well, at least one for sure that I know, one of my friends, Keith Wolferman, jumped out of the DC3 like back in Normandy. I'm pretty sure. Like I've been meaning to bug him to get more of the particulars on, but that was the plan. So I'm pretty sure he got it done.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, I've been. Yeah, I was like, man, I should have somehow got on board for that one. Hoping cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, like and like with the putt and pole and other events that are, you know, like the fire and ice tournament. You mm-hmm. know, like man, I don't know if anyone's even really watching the hockey game. And you know, have that Glacier Ice Rink here in Missoula, Montana. And I believe in February, mid-February is about. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be all online if folks want to search for it. But, that, I mean, that's a great event, too. And I mean, it's such a big reunion for folks and who've been in fire, are in fire, you know, or just have friends in fire to show up and just socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you like microbrews, that's a big deal going on there, too, and a little bit of hockey. But, when I'm, you know, I play in the JV game. There's, mm-hmm. like, a JV and a varsity game, and it's... To me, man, that varsity game gets pretty high end. It's fun to watch, man. Yeah. There's some good skaters. The JV can be a little more rough, but it's still fun. And mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember like getting ready to take the face off the first year I was in it, and like I swear no one was even looking at the ice because everyone's catching up, and everyone's right. just so stoked to see everybody, man. Yeah. There's so much love in the crowd, man. Mm-hmm. People are hugging and high fiving, and just so happy to be hanging, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, it's loud in there, but people are mostly just like. Yelling to, you know, hear each other and, mm-hmm. and socialize, you know, and it's you can feel it, man. It's the atmosphere is just electric and warm, you know.
Yeah.
It's super cool. So it's like, yeah, man, if you just want to like pop into that, you know, you don't have to be ex-forcers or ex-fire or anything. You just come hang out, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, come enjoy some microbrews, or if you just want to come just be in the atmosphere, you don't have to have any of that either. You just come drink water and watch some hockey and hang out and meet some folks, and yeah, it's a great scene, you know.
I know they have a similar thing in. I want to say it's, where is it in, like, Illinois, I think they have the same.
Yeah, I think
it's like
right.
I think it's like the East Coast version of the, because I know a couple of guys that I used to work, well, they live in Chicago now,
yeah.
now, but they're big hockey players. And
yeah, and I think they do, because I think they do like a structure versus city, yeah, or police. I mean, like, yeah, fire versus police.
Yeah, fire tournament. Versus police, yeah.
I think it's pretty big, yeah. Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to think of Rosemont or something, like one of the big, Rosemont is a big venue outside of Chicago, and I want to say it's like at that, like they filled up the Rosemont last year or something, because I remember checking it out.
Yeah, because I think last year, was it too hot and they did it?
Oh, maybe.
They had to switch it to the night for some reason. Yeah, I think it was too warm or something like
that.
Oh,
it was going to be an outdoor event or something? Or
yeah, they have one that, there's one that's professional that they do it every year, the outdoors.
Oh.
And that was the one that got put it at night because it was too hot. But I think the fire and ice one is like a indoor.
Yeah, I want to see it because I remember it being bigger than I expected.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't really heard of it. And then I just happened to trip on it when I was looking up something for our fire and ice tournament. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, that's super cool. Or maybe one of our friends in the building's fire department was talking about maybe going and trying to plan it or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, man, that'd be pretty sweet.
Well, I know for a while they used to have the boxing match too. The,
oh, really?
Because one of my friends was he got me into boxing.
Oh yeah, that's a great sport.
He would do the fire and ice boxing, or not? Wasn't fire and ice, but it was a fire department and the police boxing, and jeez, it was like they had a Forest Service part of that too.
Really?
And, yeah.
Dang,
I haven't heard since like COVID. I don't know if they
the green, the red, and the blue together.
Yeah, got rid of it, or if they still do it. I don't know, but
man, yeah, I could see that being a heck of an event.
Yeah, but I mean, something anybody could really throw it together. You've got friends.
Yeah, and the thing about those events is they make people more active, right? Like before, years ago, before I was involved in the fire and ice tournament, it was the city of Missoula Fire and then the rural department. Mm-hmm. So like they're two different departments, your city fire department and then the rural fire department of Missoula. And then the fire, the Forest Service. So there's three teams. There's mm-hmm. actual tournament. Now it's just like us versus the city, Forest Service versus the city. But I want to say the city had a really good team. We'll just say that for the story. Mm-hmm. The city had like really good hockey players. So it made like rural and the Forest Service like really step their game up. Because like the Forest Service was just getting crushed.
Right, yeah.
And then I heard it kind of changed the recruiting for all three agencies. They're mm-hmm. just like, yeah, senior, you got some fire experience. Do you play hockey? You know, like skip right over to right, hockey. Like, yeah. What's your hockey experience?
Important
like?
Things.
Yeah, exactly.
We could train you to be a firefighter, but if you're a good hockey player, you're definitely going to.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely got a spot for you, but you know, you got to see you on the ice first.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it made it kind of cool. And then, you know, it makes us all play a little more hockey too. You know, mm-hmm. I play as much as I can. I mean, I really enjoy the sport, but it keeps you active, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think that's the trick. Just find something that you enjoy that's social.
Yeah.
Like if it's pool with your buddies, you know, go to the pool hall.
Yeah.
Like growing up, we would take a $10 roll of quarters to the pool hall.
Yeah.
And we played slop until it came down to like the eight ball. And then the eight ball was like, you have to, like if I was shooting the eight ball, you would call like what pocket I'd have to shoot it in.
Oh, really? And, you know, so I would call your shot.
Yeah, you would call my last shot and vice versa. And then as we got
what if it was like an impossible shot? Like
it didn't matter.
Whatever
shot you wanted to make, you wanted me to do like four rails and the corner pocket, well then that's what I would have to shoot at.
That's what you're going for?
Just to make you better. And then
that's so important, man.
Like, yeah. And then as we got better, we just stopped playing slop and we just started, you know, shooting real. And then we go to Big Mama's, that's the name of the the pool hall. And it was like 50 cents a game or something like that. And when our $10 was over with, we go do something else. But
oh man. Yeah. I like that, man. Just like you said, a reason to get together. You know, that's part of the reason for hockey. You know, it's like just people talk about the locker room, right?
Mm-hmm.
The locker room event. Speaking of, I got a funny story about that. So I jumped up a league to play. It's called the B League, but it's like more the high-end hockey players. Mm-hmm. So there's three different leagues I play in spring and fall in at the Glacier Ice Rink in Missoula. So you have your B League, which is top players, C League, which is like intermediate,
mm-hmm.
and some kind of better beginners, and then the novice, which is I don't know why they call it like D or anything, but it's novice, so it's for beginners.
Mm-hmm.
And usually in the fall, it's a chance for people to go up a league and try to compete at the other league and get better. So I jumped up to B League. So I'm already like, oh, all right, man, I don't want these people to be like mad that I'm here, you know. So like,
right, yeah.
I was like trying to show up early, get my stuff on, and we have like this thing that's like a day passing that tells you your upcoming schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I was like, man, I know I'm on the Blues, but it had me as like the Bulldogs or something. And I was like, yeah, maybe I messed that up, you know, close enough.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
So I'm like, all right, you know, and I saw my schedule was all on the Bulldogs, like, as my team. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, maybe I was wrong. So, like, because I just glanced at it, you know, a couple days before that. So I head in, sit in the Bulldogs locker room, and I'm looking around, and I knew who my captain was, and I'm not seeing him. I'm like, well, maybe he didn't make this game or something. And then, like, their captain stands up, which that guy I knew, right. Name's Mick, and I was like, and I look over the guy next to me, like, this is Mick's your captain? They're like, yeah. I'm like, who's your mascot? Bulldogs. I'm like, who are you playing? They're like, Blues. I'm like, oh, man, I'm in the wrong locker room. And I've already been, like, kind of, like, chopping up with these guys and getting to know them a little bit. And I ended up talking to this guy who played in the NHL for a little while. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. You know, big, older fella. Could skate in his hands better than I can skate on my feet.
Right.
You know? I was like, which I found out later. But I was like, oh, well, shoot, boys. Well, it was good to get to know you. You guys are kind of lucky that I'm not on your team because I'm horrible. So, you know, you guys will find out here soon. You know, or something, like, I kind of make a joke. And then as I'm getting my stuff together, like, and I'm about to leave, that NHL guy's like, wow, man, I'm going to miss him, man. What a great locker room guy. just kind of that funny stuff, you know. Like, so I was like, well, once you see me skate, you're not going to miss me. And I take off and you get my stuff in the other locker room, go play. But, you know, just that kind of interaction.
Right, man. Yeah.
Like, I think it keeps you young and, yeah, it keeps you from taking life too serious. You know, you get
definitely.
Out there, and, yeah, get to joke around with some people and have some fun, and, you know, other stressor stuff just drifts away. Yeah. You know, otherwise, man, you just got like this beehive of stress that just will hang, man.
And that's right.
And it gets friends.
Got to get that stuff out of there.
Yeah, because your bees will build bee. You know, you get more bees and more mm-hmm. bees. You know, and yeah, it just piles on. You know, you got to go out and get some exercise. It's the best way to clear it. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
And then being social and exercise really helps too.
Yeah.
Like. I've never really messed with CrossFit that much and just never really had much interest in it. You know, mm-hmm. like it's not the kind of workout I'd like to do, but I always thought exercise, good workout.
Right.
But it's more than that because it's a group, you know?
Yeah.
So I always thought CrossFit was a good thing because, you know, you get a group together, you do your WOD, right, workout mm-hmm. of the day, and then usually got a team to get through it with you and someone maybe instructing. So
yeah, there's a lot of team building or co-events on that one.
Cool events. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of, man, like positive feedback. I think there's probably like anything you get, like bad gyms, like, you know, sometimes you hear about the horror stories about bad jiu-jitsu gyms,
right,
or, you know, anything like that. But man, for the most part, I think you're probably in a good spot and mm-hmm. it's so encouraging and people like, and accountability, right? If you don't show up, you're like, hey man, what happened?
Right.
Well, last week, dude, were you on Tuesday?
You sick or something? What's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Man, you've been missing a little bit. What's happening here? You know, and you get that kind of like fun guilt, you know?
Yeah.
There's a cool t-shirt that used to exist called Power. What it had on it was a stencil that said Powered by Shame. Mm-hmm. The Grangeville Smoke Jumpers. I was like, pretty accurate.
Yeah, definitely.
But shoot, man, I think we're about wrapped up for time. I don't want to keep you from your jiu-jitsu tonight. The only thing that we had left off on is Mike's future, which I think we kind of figured out. You come back here.
Yeah, come back here, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, thanks again, man. It's great. Yeah. Dude, so good to get to know you, man. Great working with you this summer.
Nice to work with you, too.
Yeah, I know we're all going to miss you a ton, dude.
Sorry, it was so short.
Yeah. 120 days, right?
Yeah.
That's all you get.
Well, I told Matt and those guys if they need me, I'll come back.
Oh, yeah.
Let me know.
Yeah,
I was like, I'll probably bring you back next year for helicopter stuff. I'm like, let me know. Whatever.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good, man. See, that's a good connection to have there, you know.
And
T-Bro, you know, good to get to know him, and he's a good guy.
And then they were talking about bringing guys out to Missouri too. So I mean,
so you get that like exchange going. It's all about relationship building.
We do bring a lot of people from Missouri and mostly from Oregon because we know, the COR guys and just Central Oregon Repellers. Yeah, Central Oregon Repellers.
Oh.
But I mean. We'll bring whoever wants to come.
Yeah, come on, come
that
down.
Could be you.
Play. Yeah, it could be me. I don't know. I am red guard still somehow. But maybe
you're kind of busy. Your kids are going to be born in February. So.
Yeah, I got a new
Remember,
one.
Remember, Michael's a good name.
Yeah, yeah. I'll keep it in mind. I don't. Yeah, wife's kind of already sold on one, but you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe it'll be a Michael. Maybe it'll look like Michael when he comes out. Put some glasses on it. Could be Michael.
Could be.
Yeah. Well, man, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yeah,
and
thanks for having me.
Yeah. And thanks for everyone who's tuning in and supporting the podcast. I really appreciate it a lot. So have a good evening.